Welcome to episode 81 of Man and Machine Podcast, presented by Archimedes International. I am your long-lost host, Matt Makoviak, and with me, as always on this enlightened journey, is my friend and co-founder of Archimedes International, Dr. Ian Bett. Dr. Bett, welcome to episode 81.
Matt, I'm glad you found us again. I know you're a busy man, but it's always nice to have the co-founder of the Man and Machine Podcast, Archimedes International, on an episode, and we're going to have a grand time today, like we always do. Probably going to share some controversial opinions based on the couple of topics we have here. I'm wondering if you're as excited to talk about the metaverse again as I am.
Dr. Bett, I'm so excited. I'm just surprised that we're going to be under the time of the recent champion of the Boston Marathon that finished up this morning at 2 hours and 6 minutes. So you asked me how much time I had, and I said I had plenty of time, but I don't know if I have that much time to talk about this. But regardless, we're going to dive into this metaverse topic again, right?
Yeah, and for the listening audience, if this is your first episode of the Man and Machine Podcast brought to you by Archimedes International, you may not know, but the gracious host, Matt Makoviak, is an endurance and ultra athlete. So definitely was keeping a close eye on the day of recording here of the Boston Marathon. And I'm excited to hear that their record time would, I'd probably walk about 5 miles in that amount of time. I'm a little bit quicker than that, but that is amazing. But not as amazing, Matt, as this really, I think, fantastic evaluation from CNBC by the author was Rebecca Fannin, who did a terrific job. You know, a lot of these articles that we review on the Man and Machine Podcast are fairly short, and we dive into the topic and share our perspective. But Ms. Fannin did a terrific job because she talked a lot about the subject, the individual at the heart of the article, but also the larger subject, which is the metaverse. And so this piece was entitled Hong Kong's Mr. Metaverse, on why he's placing a big Web3 bet against Mark Zuckerberg. This is going to get hot and heavy pretty quick, Matt.
No doubt. And I believe, you know, when you start talking about the metaverse and when you talk about Zuckerberg, I mean, you know, there's a lot of opinions out there, some favorable, some not so much. But I think what this article is really deep diving into is kind of like the centralized, decentralized, you know, version of the metaverse and who's going to come out on top when everything is said and done. And as you said, Ms. Fannin, I mean, this article, usually when you send it to me and I read an article that you send my way for a topic conversation, I can breeze through it in just a couple of minutes and get the highlights, lowlights. And here I had to really take some notes based upon the extensive nature of this article. So I'll let you kick it off with your initial thoughts. But, you know, Zuckerberg, metaverse. So is that who
we're talking about today? The gentleman's name is Yat Su, and he apparently, this is my first introduction to him, though he's been in the tech space for some time, which should just tell you that while we play experts on the Man and Machine Podcast, we don't know everyone doing everything. But he is a Hong Kong-based chairman of a startup called Animoca Brands, which is diving into the metaverse like everyone else. We've had other episodes of the Man Machine Podcast. The initial one was episode 57, where yourself, myself, and my brother Will Bett talked about Facebook's transition to Meta and what the metaverse would look like. And then episode 77, which was another recent one with my brother, where he talked about the metaverse and Microsoft and Nuance and CVS Health. This is a really, I think, critical piece for anyone who's not too familiar with what's going to happen with the economics of the metaverse. And that's why I think Ms. Fannin did such a great job, because she introduces us to Mr. Su, who's the chairman, and we get a really interesting look into how he got to be in this place. And we'll, I'm sure, talk about that. But basically, the idea here is Mr. Sue believes that you got to be early in the metaverse because there's a lot of heavyweights coming in. Facebook changing to Meta, like just really trying to brand themselves there. Microsoft, we talked about all of these other big companies that are trying to make their way onto Web3, which I think we're calling the metaverse at this point in time. I am really fascinated by all of the intricacies that are laid out in this article.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in his background, I think he had a mobile gaming company, right? And there was some elements of the metaverse, you know, really like around 2018 in the gaming industry, you know, similar type experiences. And I think that's where he started to get his investors, correct? It was kind of like seeing that this was probably, you know, in quotation marks, the future. That's where, that's when the money started to come in. And that's when everybody started to scramble to kind of get their piece of the metaverse.
Yeah. And again, what has happened over the course of time, Matt, we're coming up on 2 years of the Man and Machine podcast, is we stumble across, you know, a writing or a piece about someone who's in tech and science and artificial intelligence, and then all of a sudden they are leading the way. So another example of that was Balaji Srinivasan, who was the topic, one of the first episodes, I think it was episode 3. And I've just seen so much stuff that he's been producing content-wise and following along with him. I think Mr. Sue is going to be another one of those individuals where we've just, you know, found him because we're interested in the metaverse. And he, like you said, he's raised $810 million in venture funding from many big names. They are a unicorn, which we talked about in previous episodes, meaning that they are worth more than $1 billion. They're generating revenue. And that's just this, right? This effort, this Animoca Brands. As you said before, he's been in the tech space with a really fascinating background in gaming, but also just his life. I'm curious, you know, they say here, Matt, that the valuation currently is at $5 billion. So we're going to talk about billions of dollars here if we have time in the end of the episode with another one of our favorite topics and people. But what did you think about his background and how he got to be at this point in time? I think it's really, you know, it's not a unique story, but it's nice when you hear these types of stories.
Yeah, well, they say that he's a college dropout, right? So
yeah,
kind of like what, like Easy? But he's from Vienna, raised by parents who were musicians. So you know, his background really is in tech from the family side. It's kind of, you know, where he came from, where he evolved from, in, you know, in the gaming industry. And you know, when he founded an internet service provider at the age of 20, then sold it to IBM. So who needs college when you sell your company to IBM, I guess, right?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned his parents are artists. You know, there's a lot of creativity there. And I think that's where this technology bent for both you and I is coming from. Maybe this is the way that we express our creativity. Others have really dived into the technology aspect, and he built his own company, sold it, built another company, and, you know, has had the experience of being from a different part of the world than where he originally grew up, and now making all these connections, it appears, into the burgeoning technology space, which the metaverse is trying to encapsulate all of that.
Yeah. Well, and I think if you look back at it a little bit, I mean, his path to where he's at today is a little like Zuckerberg's in a way, because both of them are in college and kind of starting up their own companies and doing this, you know, Zuckerberg with Facebook and you know, he's going with the mobile gaming aspect of it. But, you know, and the author early on kind of draws a line in the sand with and it's so, right? Did I get that right? Yeah. So, okay. You know, yet so's kind of moral dilemma with the metaverse, and it's basically like, you know, Facebook owns all your data, right? I mean, none of it belongs to you. So where he wants to kind of say, hey, let's not do that. Let's decentralize it. Everybody kind of shares everything, you know, in the metaverse. It's open. So other people can collaborate and do things in it. So there's a stark difference early on and kind of comes out swinging, I think, in a way, Dr. Bett.
Yeah, I agree. They highlight the fact that he is interested in making this decentralized, utilizing blockchain technology, which is something else we've talked about on the podcast multiple occasions. We had one of my friends slash colleagues, who's a blockchain expert, Leah Houston, and another physician, an emergency physician, was one of our first guests on the podcast talking about blockchain technology. And that's definitely another area that is going to be utilized pretty heavily in the metaverse. And it appears that's where he's hoping to take it, in opposition to some of these other companies, whether it's Facebook or CVS or Microsoft, that are likely coming at the metaverse from a perspective of wanting to use your data to make more revenue, versus it appears he's interested in taking this from a, hey, we're going to move forward socially and technologically. Let's make sure this is accessible to everyone equitably.
Yeah. You know, there's probably a nervous joke you can make out there, Dr. Bett, about, you know, your data is out there. Someone owns it. You know, would you want that data to get out? And I think there was a recent comedian, late night comedian, that was joking about having the data of politicians, right? Because they were voting on, you know, allowing it to be private and things. And, you know, like, you don't realize how scary it is when it's behind a closed door that they can get out in the open. Data is currency. Data is worth a lot of money. So these sites, the metaverse owning all that, they kind of control the purse strings, with it at your expense, in a way.
Yeah, and it's a thread that's been going through, I'd say, the last year of these episodes of the Man and Machine podcast is data, right? And data privacy versus data security and data ownership. And so the idea is, we're producing data, and are we getting any of the economic benefit from that data, or are we simply data depots that are having it's sold and repackaged, which effectively, in many ways, Facebook has done brilliantly. That doesn't mean it's not negatively, but yeah. One of the other things
you,
that
you can love it or hate it, but you're right. It's successful.
Yeah. And one of our, you know, other shadow guests on the podcast, Andrew Yang, would like to say that I have the data. And we all have this data. It's whether or not we have control over it, and whether we're going to be able to financially benefit from it. And so, again, in this piece, which we'll have a hyperlink to, and I would encourage the listening audience to go and read this piece and educate themselves if they need be. But they talk about one of the big venture capital firms, Andreessen Horowitz, has really taken an effort at trying to become the backbone of the metaverse and investing a lot. And that's, again, why Mr. Sue is so interested in getting in early, is to prevent some of these companies that would like to make our data their financial benefit, you know, preventing them from leading the way.
Yeah, I think it was earlier this week too that, or earlier, I guess, I don't know when the article exactly came out, but they were saying, you know, recently that a lot of people balked at the fee structure that Meta put out. So the subscriptions, the in-app purchases, you know, anything that was being sold through the metaverse was being taxed at a 50% rate by Meta. And people were like, whoa, time out. Like, you know, that's too much. This is my, you know, I created this, so I should get a bigger share. So it's kind of like that platform versus developer, war negotiation that's kind of going on right now. And, you know, the corporations see this as a huge profit, you know, center. I think that, you know, the content creators are looking at it saying like, hey, this is an open canvas for me to be able to create on. I should, you know, this is my art. I should get paid for it. And so that's kind of going on right now with the centralized version. I think what we're talking about here is kind of like saying, no, like more power to the people, if you will.
Yeah. And I just had an idea or an example that came into my mind. I'm sure most people that are listening to this podcast, yourself, myself included, have been to an open air market, you know, and if you go and buy something from someone at an open air market, that's money that they make. The idea of a centralized economy in the metaverse would be like, oh yeah, you paid them money for their thing, but that money goes to the organizer of the event and that person doesn't get any of it. That's effectively how our data is being used at this point in time where, yep, we're producing it, we're making it available and it's being monetized, but we're not getting any of it. And it definitely seems like Mr. Su's effort in getting into the metaverse early might have some altruism behind it, though there is a significant financial benefit. Doesn't mean it cannot be shared. So one of the things that, you know, struck home to me was a quote about what's happening here. So the quote is from Kevin Chow, who's the managing partner of Web3, startup incubator Superlayer in San Francisco, which is backed by an Andreessen Horowitz startup. He says in this article, what Yacht and Onimoca brands are doing in blockchain games is trailblazing. I think Facebook will be disrupted. It's a well-known trap. Take Blockbuster and Netflix as an example, where the business model for new tech won out. So he's almost saying that Facebook is old and their business model might be easily overrun by this effort by Mr. So, which I think the example you gave before is a perfect example. They came in with this old revenue model and people balked at it immediately because it made absolutely no sense.
Yeah. And it even states that, you know, Zuckerberg knows that like the game is going to be up at some point, right? I mean, there's no indication where he thinks that he's going to win out. He, you know, it's almost like a short-term grab for whatever he can get now before it goes in the other direction. So, you know, it's very interesting. But usually the winners of these things are the ones that have the most money behind them, right? So this yep. is, you know, it's fine and dandy and it's hope and optimism. And, you know, it's, hey, you know, it's going to be better for the future, which I'm sure technology will win out, but you know, all it takes is a little more cash on the other side and suddenly the scale tips the other way.
Yeah, I think you're right. There definitely has to be more to it than just Archimedes International deciding to get into the metaverse. We're not somehow going to outwork or outplay Mark Zuckerberg and Yat Su. There's got to be some financial backing here. Yeah. Always looking for investors in case anyone's listening. But
But you know, I mean, Dr. Bett, and I mean to cut you off here.
No, fine.
I think what's kind of interesting here, we talked about this, I think you said it was episode 57, kind of about the metaverse. I mean, this is the Wild West, right? And so, yeah. You know, it's wide open. And so the centralized approach to it is kind of like what people know, right? People kind of trust it, even though they might not like it. It's kind of like, this is a tried and true model. So like, let's steer it this way. But it's too wild to be captured, right? I mean, you can't tame it. So the metaverse is going to constantly evolve and change, you know, web 2 to web 3, right? So there's going to be upgrades that are going to take place. So I think it's so early to tell what exactly the final product is going to look like. And I don't think it's ever going to be finalized, I guess. It's going to be more fluid and it's going to change. And it's those that can kind of ride with the changes, you know, for the long haul are going to be the ones that are going to control it and probably profit more off of it.
Yeah. And I think maybe that does give an edge to innovators in the tech space like Mr. Su, who have been in multiple different markets, the gaming market, the messaging market. And there's another quote here in the article from Mark Jackson, who's the founder of Seahorn Capital. He says, in describing Animoca Brands, it's a lucky, scrappy bunch from Hong Kong that's not been afraid to take a bet on unproven business models and teams and got in at the right time. That's why I think this article is so brilliant, because you've got multiple different perspectives. And it's like gold nuggets from everyone. And you're picking up what's being put down, because that's effectively what you were thinking just a moment ago, is they've got an early adopter space. They got in early. They've got the innovation. They've got the investment. And they're not afraid of being in the wild west of technology. And I'm really intrigued now. I'm not going to say I've changed my stance on the metaverse, Matt. For those of you that haven't listened to episode 57 or 77, I'm not anti-metaverse. I just think that there's a lot of other utility to the science and technology that is undergirding the metaverse to benefit humanity than just creating a metaverse. But if somebody like Mr. Su is going to be leading the way, maybe my thoughts can be changed.
Well, and Animoca Brands too, right? They've inked licensing deals with distribution deals with Atari, Formula One Racing, Warner Music Group, and MGA Entertainment, and also with Disney. So it's, they've got some clients behind them. They've got some products to sell. So it's not like they're just, you know, hey, this is really cool. Like, we think we can do this. And we've got a couple of freelance creative artists out there making some mobile video games that we think are going to be worth your time. It's like, no, we're bringing in some big boys to the table. You know, you have to listen to us.
Yeah. And that's always an advantage when you're going to go up against Facebook or Meta. And definitely for those who aren't aware or too knowledgeable about Andreessen Horowitz as a venture capital firm, I mean, there's few other investment vehicles in the world that have played a role in startups. So I like the fact that the metaverse might actually be connecting some of these parts of the world in a way different than what's been experienced so far, right? I mean, you can have friends and family on a Facebook page. You can be connecting with new people, old friends on that platform, no doubt. But there's a different culture and there's a different perspective when you have somebody coming from, you know, they're based in Hong Kong. As you mentioned before, he grew up in Vienna, but you know, he's got other Southeast Asian background and heritage. And so they're coming at it from a different perspective, maybe than just an American venture capital perspective. There might actually be some utility to decentralizing information and putting the power back in the people's hands, as you said before.
Yeah, and I think it's been called more of a evolution than revolution. So
yeah,
you know, this is something that is going to be changing over time. Snoop Dogg bought a mansion for what? How much was it? Was it $450,000? Was that what they were asking for to go around like the homes around his virtual metaverse mansion?
Yeah, that's what the homes around his mansion. Yeah, so they say here that Animoca, one of their subsidiaries, is Sandbox, which is a blockchain based application in the metaverse. And God bless Snoop Dogg, man. Calvin Brodus. We grew up listening to him as a rapper. Murder Was the Case That They Gave Him also. And I can't get away from this guy. If I do get into the metaverse, Matt, I think I'm going to have to just accept that Snoop Dogg is a part of my life, because everywhere I go, I see the same Snoop Dogg. I hope some people catch what the actual line was there.
You know, I think when you have that much money, Dr. Bet, you can take some chances and some flyers on some things, you know.
No doubt. Well, I give him props because, as you said, the online mansions around his metaverse home were going for $450,000. So that's actual. Now, we haven't had an episode of the Man Machine podcast on inflation yet, but, you know, $450,000 soon enough may not get you much in the real world either. So
it's just fascinating. I think it just goes kind of into the Wild West nature of this, where, you know, something hits and you have an opportunity to take advantage of it or buy it, or there's a product out there. People are jumping on it, you know, they're spending money with things that they don't even know how they work, you know, per se. I mean, what's a virtual mansion going to get you? I don't know. I mean, I know there's Minecraft. I know I can build a house in Minecraft. I know I can build a roller coaster in some games, but I mean, I don't get what a virtual mansion does for me. But then again, I don't have that much money, so I guess I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. And just as a quick aside, one of the other technologies that's discussed briefly in this piece is NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, and the role that they might play in the metaverse. And, you know, there's a lot of hype and maybe hope around NFTs, but one of the most well-known NFTs, the Bored Ape Yacht Club, apparently is deep into the metaverse here. So Mr. Su's got a lot of competition, most of it unfriendly from an economic perspective. I'm really interested, Matt, to follow along with how this progresses based on his investments. We'll try to keep the listening audience up to date if there's other big developments. And we'll definitely have a link to this article so people can go back and look. I know we were going to try to save a few moments at least to talk about other big developments in science, technology, and artificial intelligence and medicine. One of the biggest, it's going to be interesting when this episode goes live, we might have to do an emergency episode to update the listening audience. Matt, I don't know if you want to weigh in here. What in the world is going on with Twitter and Elon Musk?
Elon Musk wants to buy Twitter, Dr. Bat. I mean, we're talking about having money to burn and money to spend on things, and why not buy a social media platform? And what, $57 a share?
Yeah, $52.40 was the offer that he made. And you mentioned, Matt, we're recording this on Boston Marathon Day, which is April the 18th this year. This episode will go live in about a week. So when it goes live, we might know whether or not Mr. Musk has been able to purchase Twitter. For those who may not be following along as closely as Matt and I are, you know, certainly I don't have an extra $40 billion laying around, but he does. So, you know, he made an initial effort, bought, I think it was a 9.2% stake in Twitter, bought shares at 9.2% of the total shares, was invited to come onto the board, per my understanding, and then decided to not accept the board position and is going to try to now do a hostile takeover by just buying the entire company and taking it private. And part of my language for anyone who has children nearby, but basically created a shitstorm over the last 5 days because of what has transpired.
Yeah. And I know this will be old news by the time this podcast comes out, which won't be too long before it goes live, but I think today he said that he was going to basically kick the board out, and whoever is on the board is going to get paid $0. Like, they're not even going to be paid board members. So, you know, sometimes having all that money might be a good thing, might be a bad thing. I don't know. But, you know, I think let's take it back for just 1 second here and talk about the concept of privatizing Twitter, because this was something that our buddy Prof G was talking about before. It was kind of like,
yeah,
was the future of Twitter. He thought that, you know, making a subscription based platform, you'd get rid of a lot of the bots, you'd get rid of a lot of the, you know, the people that hate speech, I guess, would be, you know, something that would possibly be eliminated because people aren't going to pay to be able to post those thoughts online. I mean, I guess you could. I mean, you have the right to.
Yep.
Once you, but then you could really create standards and strict standards because it'd be a private company. So It's something that's not novel to Twitter. I mean, this is a possibility for it. But the way that this is going about right now is kind of like what the WTF moment in the Twitterverse.
Yeah, and there's definitely details that I'm sure will come out at a later date, whether that's a week from now or a month from now, a year from now, or 10 years from now, about what all was going on. But we've invited Elon on the show a few times. Hasn't been on yet, but we'll talk about him here, trying to take a publicly owned company, and I am a shareholder. And just looking at, I don't know if you saw this, Matt, I don't have it pulled up here, but they showed, other than Jack Dorsey, who's owns 2% of the stock, there are people probably, maybe 1 or 2 degrees of separation from us, maybe even Prof G, who own more shares of Twitter than the rest of the board does combined. So my 2 cents is this, Matt. I think he made a fair market offer to take Twitter private. And I would have been in favor of that as a shareholder, but also because I think you're right. Even if it were $3 a month or $5 a month, people would pay for it who wanted to utilize it in a way that we do, which is somewhat for fun. Some of it, obviously Man and Machine podcast has a Twitter page that we put our content on. I get plenty of good content, articles to read, academic medical articles people are posting, reasonable discussions about difference of opinions. I would pay for that. It's like paying for a newspaper subscription or Substack or Medium. That's the way I would look at it. And I think it would get rid of some of the people who are just there to stir up trouble. And I think many of the bots would go away. And that includes human bots who are just there to take up space and add nothing. So I would be in favor of it going private. And I would be in favor of that being under Elon Musk.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not quite there with you. I think the privatization part, definitely I can see. And the more you're on Twitter, I'm definitely, if you've been to the last presidential election, I'm all for privatizing it, getting rid of some of those bots and some people that might just be on there to cause trouble. I think my concern is, I think this sets bad business precedents, Dr. Bett. So it's like, just because you have the money doesn't necessarily give you the right to be able to do everything that you want to do. And sometimes I think, while I'm always amazed by Elon's creativity and the way that he's trying to revolutionize things, I think sometimes he could be more of like a spoiled child that, he's got that silver spoon in his mouth. Like, well, I'm just going to do it because I got the money. And I don't really care what you think. And that's not always, to me, the best way of doing things, because just because you have a lot of money doesn't necessarily give you the right to everything that you want, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And you know me long enough that probably behind closed doors, we've described each other as spoiled children at point in time, but definitely not with the $40 billion to buy one of the most, if not the most utilized public forums on the planet. I'll be interested to see how this plays out. I have a sense that he's going to get blocked from purchasing it.
On Twitter. Blocked on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I actually have his Twitter page pulled up right now. I wanted to see if there was anything in real time happening that he was tweeting that might make this episode more salient for the listening audience. But it's definitely going to be a topic that we touch on in future episodes of the Man and Machine podcast. My final thoughts for this episode, Matt, are just that I think I might be a little bit more positive about the metaverse than I was prior to learning about Animoca Brands and Yatsu. That doesn't mean I'm positive. I'm just more positive than I was before. And I'm interested to seeing what happens from from a social media standpoint, and someone who utilizes Twitter to help promote our efforts at the Man and Machine Podcast and Archimedes International to decentralize information about what happens with this Elon Musk and Twitter scuff up.
Well, as it was said before, Dr. Bett, this is more of an evolution than a revolution. So you give this thing a couple of weeks, I'm sure we'll be back on the podcast talking about what's transpired over the last couple of weeks and how it's all different than what we talked about today in episode 81 of this podcast. So, you know, as we're wrapping up, Dr. Bett, before we leave, speaking of the end of episode 81, I would ask you to tell the listening audience where to be able to find Archimedes International and Man Machine Podcast on the metaverse or on Twitter or wherever else you might find this lovely podcast.
Yeah, so I appreciate you asking that, Matt. We're still on archimedesinternational.net. You can find us there. Still have our Archimedes INTE2 Twitter page. We have been using our new Man and Machine Podcast Twitter page and picking up a lot of followers there and sharing just the episodes and some GIFs as well to keep it lighthearted. Those are the best places to find us. We're always interested in collaborating with individuals. We've had many fantastic guests on recently. We're looking forward to more, some return guests, some new guests. And if anyone whose name was dropped on this episode is interested, you're always welcome. We will make space for you here.
Well, that's great. And I want to thank you for the time and thank you for inviting me back to co-host with you today. I was excited to be off on Patriots Day here and the opportunity to be able to have this podcast with you and record about the metaverse, about Twitter and whatever else kind of popped up into our crazy brains.
Well, if this is your first episode of the Man and Machine Podcast, thank you for joining us as we finish up episode 81. If you've come back every once in a while, hopefully you had some fun listening to Matt and I talk about, I think, some really pertinent technological and social things that'll be happening. We will see how good we are at predicting. But if you've been with us since the very beginning of the Man and Machine Podcast, sponsored by Archimedes International, you will remember that we would like for you to always keep in mind that the imagined fuels reality.